First of all, that reminds me of what it's in that session, because in fact it's quite unique. It's a expression. I don't have to give you any words, it's about it. It's very unique. It's very daring. And, but it made me, thank you that you actually put you in, and it's very important. So thank you, right? Well, this is the second session. I'm taking up the chair in the meeting and putting on the hat to moderate. Now, the topic we have here is digitalization and cybersecurity, challenges and strategies for the maritime industry.
Yeah.
On that note, then, that one must mention that cyber risk is a term which in my dictionary hardly exists a couple of years ago. In fact, when I first heard about it, I felt totally uneducated. Vicky, I was lucky enough to come across a guy, very colourful guy, very knowledgeable person. You guys are very. And the biggest all my brother, Peter Hacker. Peter Hacker, really? Now, this guy is Swiss based, and we've got him at my insurance arm, it's in the World Global, as he exists, like a specialist. Quite frankly, he gave a few presentations, and I was totally lost. First of all, I was lost by the fact that I never knew or was aware of that high in the agenda cyber risk. And secondly, going to take the details and all the aspects which one has to know about handling cyber risks, because that was, I feel, as again, I mentioned earlier, totally ignorant.
But there's that about Philip Seacrest, said so.
On that note, I'd like to present my panelists, who are Alexander Osborne, who's the group director of the 19th Albion Group. I think he's been there for quite a few years. Mr. Russell Kempley, who's the Chief Propositions and Security Officer in Cyber Parliament. And Mr. Butters Lathosopoulos, Chief Executive of METIS. Now, what I'm going to do is, if you can allow me, I want to throw a few questions and create a dialogue between you and us, and perhaps, kind of score each other about where you agree or where you don't agree. And perhaps also get a bit of the input from the audience, especially on a topic like this, which I'm sure is very new to most of us this year. It gives the opportunity of literally being more fun, collective, about how we have to address it. Because whatever is going on, and cyber risk, from what I understand, it's getting worse and worse. I mean, with digitalization, which obviously is helping, on the other hand, I think the risk is getting more complicated, the more traditional, the more technically and conversational becoming. Now, first I'd like a question to Balance, Balance those ones. Question is the following. Has digitalization and shipping reached a level of maturity comparable to other civil industries?
Thank you.
Thank you, George. Thank you, Nicholas, and our team for inviting us. It's a pleasure being here. Thank you, Paulie, for hosting this. Such an interesting session, just 4 hours. To your question, George, I think, if I had to give a quick answer, no. Shipping industry has not reached the level of maturity of other industries, even similar ones like aviation and automotive. I think they've gone decades ahead of what we're doing in digitalization. And frankly, I think that has to do with a couple of factors. One is that in the aviation industry, it's a much more centralized, it's less fragmented industry. The makers are only two or three in the world. Designers and makers are probably the same place in that sense. So it's less fragmented, it's more centralized, and it's definitely more standardized. And I think the main problem with the degree of adoption, the degree of innovation, and indeed we're seeing big strides lately, but I think things would have been a lot different had standardization been imposed, so to speak, either de facto or through regulation in the shipping industry. I think we're paying a lot more to both the owners for using the technology as suppliers for connecting the dots between the various makers of systems. And we might make some money in the short term, but I think it's actually hampering the innovation and adoption of digital technology. So I think we have to make a move, and I'm always a proponent of all of us pushing towards standardization, so that we know that, as we have in our car, a standard system that we plug in and we get the data out, and we should have a similar system in ships coming out of a yard, for instance. So, you know, I'm optimistic for the future, but we have to make something more aggressive and more disruptive in that sense.
Thank you. Thank you, Pablo. Another question for Russell. What are the implications of owning and managing new vessel subject to the EU26 regulations?
Thank you, George, and also very pleased for the invitation to speak here today. The EU26 regulations is a very specific new piece of regulation which has been able to impact the shipping industry. This is from IACS, the first associations. And it's one of the first pieces of regulation which is really starting to impact on the shipping owners, operators, because it starts to mandate with some quite strict rules around the fleet limitations, how security will be managed for vessels moving forward. And this impacts directly on digitalization, because in order to get some of the benefits of digitalization, such as remote surveys, maintenance, these kind of things, you naturally want to start joining up systems and technologies of all the vessel that have historically been isolated, being secure through that isolation. And as soon as you start to then want to take these benefits of digitalization, you need to post some thought around security, because that's not always the first thought the business is returning to. The cluster standards have helped them need to apply some regulations. So it's the first piece of regulation is really going to start to bite and impact how businesses think about specifying new vessels and then operate those vessels going forward. It covers the full lifestyle of the vessel, not just the actual management and day-to-day use of it. So it'll be critical for businesses to get to grips with that in order to then start to or continue to get benefits for digitalization.
Thank you. Alex, digitalization is a foundation for utilizing artificial intelligence technology. So, in order to assist in further optimization, how can the maritime value chain benefit artificial intelligence?
Thank you, George. In addition to what Christina and Deloitte mentioned, the AI can help us with things to automate a lot of processes in shipping. But before we get to that, we also have to acknowledge the shipping industry, similar to what Paris mentioned. We have to overcome our technical debts first of all. We have to start investing in digitalization, and we have to find the right digital agenda. And then we'll take it from two perspectives. Representing the group, we have ship management and ship owning. So certainly in our world, we also have technical debt by not the modern technology, not yet having focused on data in the past. So in order to come to a journey of AI and automation, etc., all of us have to reflect, first of all, what's our business model? What's the data we are capturing? We're talking about IoT data, we're talking about ERT data, we're talking about financial data, etc. So what we have to understand, first of all, I believe all of us, is we need to standardize this data, we need to break down silos, and we have to think in processes going forward, not anymore in a maintenance application, and there's an human application, then we're doing something on the emission data reporting, for example. We have to think in end-to-end process and standardizing this data. That's also a point that Panos made before. We are lacking severe standardization, which can help us all in creating common cloud operating models, creating common platforms that we trust in and help to create further efficiency all over. Because only when we have trustworthy data broken down the silos, the AI will really come into fruition at the end of the day. Because without that structured data, the AI will only learn from our legacy, and that's not where we're going to go towards the future. That's something that's an important part that Deloitte was also mentioning. Get the data under control, digitalize first the foundation of your operations, and then start utilizing AI going forward. Nevertheless, reflecting as a ship manager, we strongly believe in AI. AI for us, at this point in time, is on the co-pilot side. We want to use AI to assist us in complex business challenges, to automate them, and guide us with finding truth in our data, helping us to take decisions, never take decisions to this point of view. An example, help us to find problems in the maintenance patterns of our maintenance data, help us to possibly optimize crew rotation going forward, etc. So we want to utilize AI going forward in automating and helping us to make the right decision based on the data we're structuring right now.
Thank you. I want to ask a question to the principle theory, principle labor's perspective. In the shipping business, I mean, we're all aware of the cyber attacks. If you put it in category one, category two, and what to prioritize where there's more risk, and what the implications of the risk are, would you suggest, or would you feel that the cyber attacks are a lot stronger and more risky in attacking shipowning and shipman companies, or the actual ships which they're operating? And if they're so, how would you differ in terms of the risk factor? Just to clarify, in terms of addressing the shipman or shipowning company, I'm aware of the fact that the last few years, a lot of the shipping companies having their bank accounts been attacked. And some of the same bank accounts, lots of petty cash. I'll talk about some cases. I mean, forget the worst case, which we were aware of a couple of years, were devastating. And I hear about four of the work of medium-sized shipping companies. We've got that bank account hits about $1 or $2 million in the Minnesota group. And I'm just wanting to know that we're all aware of this, because count does more across the globe with the. But if you want to put it at a differential, at least there, in terms of where you think the risk is higher, would you predict the ship owning management companies or the actual ships themselves?
Very. You're absolutely right. So now, I guess it's a really interesting question. And one of the challenges in cybersecurity is to say, what is the risk banks? Because those two scenarios are going to be quite different. And the way to solve this is to step back and think about why the cyber attacks are happening, at least what I'm doing, and the perils are mostly where they're by money. So, if you look at the shore side, at the companies themselves, then what you see is there's a very large number of attacks. They're easy to target, they look like they're great businesses, that's what they are. Criminals know these, so it's easy for them to plan the attack and figure it out, and also they move money around, so they hide. So, we see, as you say, increasing numbers of this in the sector, and as we go across with the other sectors. And what that is self against on the vessel side is it's harder to make a financial gain as a criminal through targeting a vessel, although there are some examples of that. But you start to get into more exotic territories of less common but bigger impact type events. And so you're balancing how do you trade off the kind of priorities day-to-day, financial losses versus the impact of the fleet or the other attack. So that risk is at the core. What is happening is that the experiences that the companies are having on the shore side is starting to help you understand and therefore stop take actions to help other fleet size. So we're seeing a lot of activity where companies have been targeted at the shore, looking at then how to secure the entire place, including the vessels, and starting to put in place the solutions they need on both sides. So I think the risks are just quite different, but some of the solutions are the same, and it's more in their education. So what would you have?
Lennox, Padres?
I would tend to agree with Russell and you know, the balance between the shore office and the onboard world. I think, having said that, and indeed, at the moment, at least from a technology perspective, we can isolate the two worlds. We have good systems and to some extent regulation data as well, preventing something bad happening onshore to find its way all the way to the vessel. But, you know, one could think potentially in the future where you start getting a lot more automation, dare I say autonomy, the risk, the potential risk of actually affecting or wanting to affect the vessel comes into play and might come into play. Not necessarily for financial only purposes, but, you know, one could imagine that, you know, having the capacity to control the vessel or, you know, impact the vessel through a cyber attack can potentially be something which, a negative mind might think of other ways to use. So I think we have to stay ahead of the curve. From our perspective as technology suppliers, technology vendors, you know, what we do, obviously following the regulation, we have to protect our customers. We're still in a sort of an isolated environment on vessels, so we're not influenced by and we don't influence other systems at board. So it's a sort of a silo, network segmentation, it's called in our technology perspective. And it's a passive system at the end of the day. We collect data, we do analysis for our customers. When we get to the point where systems stop being passive and start becoming active, as I said before, towards autonomy, things might change.
Thank you. Alex.
Yeah, thank you for the very interesting question. No single disagreement with the chat in the loss and the though in our world, talking from the point of view, we equally treat the whole value chain as a risk potential. So it doesn't really matter for us whether we're talking about the shore office, whether we're talking about our clean agencies, whether we're talking about a singular ship or a certain particular fleet, or whether our supply chain parts, be it software development, be it any other logistics company, etc. So for us, it's essential that we're following a standardized risk management approach. We're assessing clearly the respective regulations by becoming from the IMO, might be BIM 4, might be an infrastructure provider applying to NIS or NIS2, or a hardware provider following the CIA European regulation. So for us, it's essential doing the right risk assessment and putting the respective controls in place so we are able to monitor all attack vectors. But one thing, George, is definitely a contributing factor, which I believe we all have to be aware of. Our strive for digitalization and moving on with innovative technology, implementing new innovative technology, etc., also has to be in the back of our head. We are increasing the attack vector, and that's something we all just need to be aware of. Let's take LEO satellites, Starlink, beautiful technology, yet less secure than the old geo system in this regard. And hence adopting more and more technology like cloud, for example. It's beautiful to put our applications into the cloud, but who is considering future cloud security going forward? So what I want to conclude on, for us, we're balancing ship and shore and respective cloud applications in the same manner, following a methodology that applies to equally all there.
Thank you. Regarding storage area, is that we see that the cyber risk is becoming all more progressive and more sophisticated. I tend to see, and that's where the insurance hat. A lot of the major companies, significant companies running with 50 or 70, 100 ships, they're not really prone to actually take out cybersecurity, insurance. Now, I suppose one answer to that is when you want to spend money. It's like any domestic situation with a home. You're only thinking about having your own insurance and contracts with your home, and you should be right. I think the first time is a warning light, the second one is a rethink, and the third time, you sit back and carry insurance. But cyber risks and the consequence of cyber risks, I mean, you know, the implications are fairly devastating. Now, that's the one side of the coin. On the other side of the coin, perhaps the cost of taking out an adequate insurance policy. I mean, in your experience, what you know, is it prohibitive? Is it something which, in fact, the owners are justified in putting on the back burner and waiting for another day? I mean, everybody's aware of the Maersk attack years ago, which was quite devastating. But in proportion to the number of ships or the number of fleets which are around, which may not be the same size as Maersk, but they still have, you know, fairly substantial fleets there, large amount of state. How come do you think they're inclined to not toy with the idea of actually upgrading their insurance policies to actually insure them? What's your views on that? It's probably beautiful.
Let me start from a manager point of view. I believe the balance between the insurance premium and the respective service for the investment is something that this discussion was started years ago. Because I remember roughly 3 years ago when we had a very explicit cybersecurity renewal, we were sitting there being audited, having weeks-long discussions with the insurance about our resilience, about our proceedings, etc. I believe it all starts not focusing on insurance, it starts with creating the right methodology and the right defense and resilience in terms of cybersecurity, the business continuity planning, respective risk assessment, etc., providing the controls and respective evidence in place so any insurance might come, assess the ship's infrastructure, might check the shore infrastructure, etc. From our side, we're following cyber insurance because it's indeed the very essential because it will happen to anyone else. There is no guarantee that it will not happen, that we will not be happy, we will not be exposed, etc. So cyber insurance for us is a necessary thing that we are explicitly advising our clients to follow. And we are providing respective means of standardized IT procedures, the management system, and the respective feedback defense mechanisms to make sure that premium stays low as well.
Harry?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert, obviously, on insurance premiums and price points, but I think, like any other asset or insuring that is on our activity, as you rightly said, insurance has to be, insurance people have to be a plan B. And plan A has to do with, you know, taking all the right measures in order to avoid having to pay the you know, the cost of such an issue, in that case, cyber attack. So, I know that, you know, all the companies perhaps, especially after the Maersk incident, are taking that aspect a lot more seriously. As I said, from our perspective as technology vendors, we do our bit on that. So the plan A is to have all the right measures. Plan B is to have an insurance as a backup. And I think as far as the premium goes, it usually, and you know better to be, lands in a good balance, or, you know, at the end of the day versus, you know, risk versus risk benefit. So, I'm not sure if we are at a steady state in terms of the premium, but I think we get the red here.
So. Yeah, I mean, from our perspective, the key thing is to have the data that you need to understand the risks you're trying to cover, which is also Alex talked about, putting in place sort of a methodology for risk assessment. That's the first thing. And then you can make some educated decisions around which risks you need to address with controllers and which risks you want to cover through insurance. One of the things that's interesting is, you know, like, say insurance companies, would prefer to cover safe, business if they don't need to insure somebody who has lots of, cybersecurity calls. So you end up using the same data for both purposes. So you collect information about your vessels to understand your risk, but you also need to hand that out to the insurance company, for them to make the decision. Both things end up with you willing to collect more data and understand the more detailed risk you have in control. So, both ways around, you end up being able to do that good round book first, which have that thing that we face. So that's where we end up working. Most of our customers, we're collecting that subsidy data of being faced the metrics and the federal reporting around it, so then achieve further outcomes. Thank you.
Another question. So, with the larger companies, with the, I mean, feel like the public terms especially, but with obviously the implication of the effect of cyber attack, if that's different. Do you find that the bankers or the finances take a position or a view as to what they think to be for requisites from the take on the risk report being used in the government facilities? On that note, that's where the second plan B question as well. As do you or your companies have any facility where you can go to shipping companies like Sith Barbers or whatever? Can you give an instruction manual and say, right, what do you have involved? What you risk are taking? This is what you've got to do. Do you have any, forget the insurance list or the insurance policy of the underwriters? Is there a practical way, a realistic way, professional way, of you approaching a ship running company of some magnitude and give them an instruction manual or advice as to what they can take on in terms of the covering themselves, protecting themselves? But I want to say this, it's a second part of the question. Is that, would you think the bankers take a view on that as to have that simple requisite to fund them in the belly?
No, I was going to say that we're not, at least our company, Metis, is not in the cybersecurity area as such, so we don't offer cybersecurity solutions per se. What I can say, however, is that at least touching on the biker side, that we see digitalization in the broad sense of the word being an asset for the owners, not only in terms of the operational benefits they get and the optimization of operations of energy efficiency, etc., but also in terms of how they interact with stakeholders, bank being one of them, by the way. Charters, bankers, etc. The industry is going through a level of, I would say, a paradigm shift where transparency becomes the standard as opposed to the enemy, which was the case a few years ago. The charters and the owners were never speaking on the same table. I think the example of Paul is just half an hour ago is a big indication that the industry is actually converging to talking to one another. And, you know, data exchange in that context is crucial. So what we do, at least from our side, always in a secure digital way, obviously, is to assist that new wave of transparency between the stakeholders. So I'd like to stay on the positive side simply because, you know, as I said, we don't offer cyber security solutions as such, and you know, promote the pluses rather than the minuses, if you like. Thank you.
Let me start with the plan B question. You're still included in the group. I'm at more than 30 group companies. Yes, there is an instruction manual. So we created a methodology that helps any new company that we may acquire, new company we build, with what is the basics in terms of risk assessment, building the resilience, the controls, building a business plan, a new plan, etc., leading ultimately to obtaining insurance if needed, etc. So yes, we have such kind of instructions with our security team to ensure that we're also following minimum essential standards in this regard. Now, coming to your banking question, I think it's not only about banking. I think cybersecurity is an instrumental part going forward to be the competitive advantage for ship managers, but also for ship owners. So it's essential that every ship manager owner has a cybersecurity strategy to demonstrate the resilience and business continuity at the end of the day, because that is all about security information, and it's ensuring business continuity in ship for sure in this regard. So yes, to your question, banking and other clientele of ours as a ship manager are definitely demanding cyber security, compliance, and resilience that can be demonstrated and possibly is ensured as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the various different stakeholders across the industry, bank is actually one, but there are many others who are also starting to ask questions around cyber security. But I think that the key thing is going to be agreeing some standards and some language that's going to help people to share. What you don't want to have to do is to have 50 different audits from every different person within the supply chain who has their own view of what should be there. And this comes back to one of the things I mentioned right at the start. You asked me a question about the new BOLX E26 regulations. It remains to be seen how that will play out, but that may start to provide a bit more of a standardized way of determining what vessel needs the cybersecurity requirements. So you create a notation from that which will say this vessel is type secured at a particular level. That may start to drive a little bit of harmonization across those different groups so that it becomes clearer what risk you are taking on as a new third party. The regulations are also pretty detailed, so they're still doing quite as far as the instruction manual, but they're giving you some quite clear outcomes you need to achieve the business so that you can show that. And one of the things that's really good is to drive change into the operation technologies, the vendor supply chain. Because for a long time, about the fragmentation of the industry, shipping companies have basically taken the systems or the rest of them, have little control over the customer relation and the specification of them in some places by the new regulations stopping to enforce the supply chain into the vendors that are being used to.
Take into account the substance, the profile, and the background of the audience here, then what key points would you think would be relevant to you today as now as a message? Would it be a warning shot or a preventive way of handling things or a way to be more cautious in the future? What bullet points would you want to make, taking into consideration the substance of the audience? Thank you. I'm always, I'd like to look at the bright side of life as well as, how technology can evolve and help and assist. I think that's the primary role. As we heard earlier today, the intersection between real baby drill and, the future of decarbonization, net zero is probably technology for some years to come, and it's true. And in that context, I would say that, digitalization and decarbonization, which are the two big trends in the industry at the moment, they go hand in hand. So in that context, our role is to assist, until we reach maybe alternative fuels and zero emission fuels, is to make sure that we assist our customers to, minimize and optimize the energy usage and hence carbon footprint. At the end of the day, the most economical fuel will always be the one we don't burn. So to the extent to which we can help our customers reduce their fuel consumption is a great operation of asset. And you can do that through digital monitoring and optimization. And the second coupling between digitalization and decarbonization is through you know, assessing the technical measures that you can take. So, you know, you cannot really assess the efficiency of your investment if you don't monitor the before and after storage. So, you know, I always say that digitalization and decarbonization go hand in hand. So in that perspective, I'd like to leave, you know, with the audience that, you know, these two trends, I think, will follow us for some years to come. And indeed, we're reaching a level of maturity of technology that we're moving beyond the situational awareness, monitoring, and simply alerting our customers to a more decision support, level of, you know, suggesting actions. In fact, at our company, we're going in that direction of suggesting actions, and I'd say not in the far future, we will be seeing systems like that taking actions as well. So I'm optimistic about how things will evolve, and I think if we work hand in hand, you know, there's great things to come, and I think we've both from the supplier side and the user side, we've reached a good understanding and a good we've gone beyond the hype of the early days, and I think we're at a much better state to do great things. Aston?
Yes, no, I think the key thing for this audience is to see technology talking about digitization and cybersecurity as enabling the business out. You need to have a clear view as to what you're trying to get out from these business that you're trying to get, and then see these technologies as enabling that. So cybersecurity as an enabler, therefore, wants to be a platform you can support many different business outcomes, so that you can get the value over time as you make that investment. And then you're looking to do that in a way that's efficient. So you need something that's capable to deploy and delay digitization programs. You need something which is going to work end-to-end, so it's not a solution. And you need something that's going to bring the users and the crew and everyone who has to engage with that business. So you can't have something which requires lots of specialist skill and training. You need a system to refuse or to manage service that you have around that could provide that as a wrap solution. So I think those only being those two objectives have to be
Jordan. I believe it's two things from my point of view. Here, go back to what Bhavis mentioned in the very beginning of aviation. I think in shipping, we tend to, since years, try to reinvent the wheel. So I believe one important thing is to embrace for innovation, be it helping startups to get into maritime, funding them possibly, etc. But also look at other industries, because even ourselves, the kind of a group has been evaluating and experimenting with aviation the last 1.5 years. And we see a lot of technologies, be it smart toolboxes, indeed be it maintenance regimes, be it the whole subject of how aviation collaborates about data sharing, and the whole community approach of how to develop applications, etc. So what one thing for the audience is, let's keep our minds open for aviation, let's see another industries, and let's adapt to proven technology and to proven business concepts, because it's not only the technology, it's also the way we are changing our culture and we are adapting to that principle, that proven technology. But the other part, I believe, for the audience as well, this counts for ship managers, ship owners, etc., is let's try to find a degree of standards. We're lacking severe standards, we have different international working groups, etc., but we don't even agree on the new report standard globally in this regard, etc. So let's try to find some standards that help us to be efficient, to share data, to share processes, and have to, exactly what Russell mentioned, end-to-end process integrations that will make us all a bit more safe, secure, and collaborative in this regard. Thank you very much.
One final question. You said the way your large value makes it expensive. On one hand, you're protecting yourself, but on the other hand, you're perhaps encouraging the intruder. Would you think we have the same or similar kind of situation to shipping companies, whereby certain precautions taken on the infrastructure or the technology which is put in place? Would you think on one hand, protects the industry or the company, on the other hand, perhaps could that trap potential?
I would say no. That feels like in the kind of home scenario you're thinking more about, but opportunists, criminals who are going by and looking at shiny fence and a very decent just in case. But in cybersecurity, we're much more to be about planning attacks than was you know, worry about they'll do the research and figure out whether there is something of value that they can manipulate or use for their benefit, worth a lot. And I say against apps, they'll tell me that what's without senses, they'll say you make their advice easy. So, I would say, particularly in cybersecurity, but we also know I would like to be seen that, the defense in basis is always good thing to eat.
I agree with that. So, we have to have the security defense mechanism in place. We have to have the high fence. We don't really need to promulgate it and, regulate it, but definitely the security measures have to be in place in order to defend, and to be resilient for any kind of supply chain passing.
Would you think that the employees or executives of shipping terminals, you know, and as I mentioned, Peter Hacker, he fairly colourful figure, he said the world's going to be so, by the way, but larger audience here, and one half your audience.
Yeah.
It's been there because when you ask the question, have you been attacked? Half will say yes, half will say no. What it really means, they've always been attacked, the half no, and half don't know they have. So that's why I don't really agree with that. But what I was wondering, can that scenario, you think, can it create an extra risk of having cyber attack, the vehicle, the mobile phone, or the airline sort of one of the employees to go through his all their files, iPhone, to actually get into the operation?
It was like these people generally in Catalyst, but we certainly see that because of vessel handlers living through the world air and spending their social time as well as their work time there, you get an awful lot of crossover between their personal world and their personal devices and the business assets. And that is definitely an added risk. We also see, many threats that have been eliminated from the corporate environment, like USB media and so on, are still very present on many ships. And so, yeah, those things definitely adds to the vulnerability of a vessel that you've taken that way. But that can be dealt with through the proper defenses, policies, and proper monitoring of those policies, which is where I think it's really.
Any questions for the audience? Any comments? Okay, no, well, thanks very much. Thanks for that. I have it for the Jessica, thank you.